Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Crew with it now.
Who is your daddy? Who's your daddy?
You. High fly ball, towering shot to center field. Doesn't have enough. All the way back and gone. He's done it again. Jordan Alvarez.
Is this your team or is this your daddy's team?
Yours.
Hit high in the air, deep to center field. Julio Rodriguez all the way back. It's gone! King Tuck to dead central. And it's 6-4 Astros in the ninth.
Oh, thank you, Gary Bernier, Coach Boone, Jordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, for reminding the Seattle Mariners who's your daddy. What a game last night. That was a fun one. Christian Javier dominated. Alvarez and Tucker go deep. I am Joe George. He's Andrew Carlson. You can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio. We're here with you till 2 o'clock. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Of course, the text line, the phone line, 713-780-3776. So, Andrew, on the cusp of some bad news with Luis Garcia, which we'll get into pretty quickly here, at least last night was fun.
Yeah, last night was a lot of fun. I saw the Kyle Tucker home run as I was walking into a bar last night for Cinco de Mayo. Literally walking in, first thing I see on the wall of screens is King Tuck sending that moonshot out to center field. It was a glorious game, and there are a few teams in the majors that I just feel like are get-right games and get-right teams for the Astros.
Yep.
The Mariners certainly feel like one of those. Like, no matter how well they're playing, how poorly the Astros are playing, when these two teams get together, especially it seems like in Seattle, the Astros are going to find a way to get things right.
Yeah, the Astros know that this is a team that, like, we were talking about this yesterday on the Killer Bees. Like, are they the number one rival? I know MLB.com put out this list of, like, best rivalries in each division. And they chose the Mariners for the Astros. I guess that's the right answer.
I don't think there's a true rival in terms of on the field. And I don't think there's any sort of on-the-field level of competitiveness that makes anyone in the AL West a true rival of the Astros.
Yeah.
But given some of the stuff we saw on social media last year and seemingly the animosity between the two fan bases, I will consider it a rivalry more off the field than on. But yeah, on the field, give me the Yankees all day as an actual rival of the Astros over the Mariners.
Absolutely. Like, the Yankees are way more of a rival because they've played in bigger games.
Mm-hmm.
Even though neither team has accomplished anything worth a damn versus the Houston Astros in the last 6 years, like, the Mariners are probably number two to that category. I guess the Dodgers fit in there somewhere, but they've barely played since the World Series in 2017. Like, they've played, like, 5 or 6 games since then, so they're kind of irrelevant to me, like, as a rival. You know, so it's funny that, like, when you look at last night's game, like, you go into it right before the game, you get the news officially that Luis Garcia is having Tommy John. We know that Jose Urquidy is going to be out for, like, a month. It sounds like Lance McCullers is pitching a bullpen session today. Chandler Rome wrote that in The Athletic. But it kind of just, like, it was almost like what the team needed. I think what the fan base needed, because I think down in the dumps is a good way to put it. Like, you're not playing great baseball, you know, the last, you know, 5 or 6 days. And you just got a lot of bad news.
Yeah, like, you just need something good to happen to the team, because it seems like it's been wave after wave of negative updates and negative results. And we had Todd Callis on the Wheelhouse for his weekly spot on Friday. And the first question Jake asked him was, hey, Todd, what's the state of the Astros right now? Todd says, hey, guys, not great. Like, that's legitimately where it is right now, where you've got the TV voice of the team coming on for his weekly spot. And he's saying, hey, the state of the team is not too hot right now. And I think that just sort of sums up the mood that has been around the clubhouse and the team over the last week. So to finally get the shot in the arm that the win was last night was really, really good to see.
Yeah, Christian Javier was awesome. 7 strikeouts. It was he was just, even though he still is not his best self, and before we get really into the Luis Garcia stuff, I just want to declare I'm officially anti-World Baseball Classic. I never want to see a player that I'm invested in ever play for it again, specifically pitchers. Kyle Tucker, hitters, you're fine. But look, you look at the Astros right now. Urquidy, Javier, Fromber, Garcia, like all these guys participated. And Fromber's really the only one that looks like Fromber. Like Javier's velocity is down.
Way down. It's like 2 miles plus per hour. Yeah. Like every single start, this is something that we have been looking at constantly throughout this season's form so far. He's in like the 92, 93 range. And when you throw two pitches, essentially, like he throws that fastball like what, 75, 80% of the time? When you were throwing the fastball that much and you lose that level of velocity on it, it's going to have an impact. And it's clearly had an impact on him early on in the season.
Absolutely. All right, let's hear from Dusty Baker. Here's Dusty Baker last night after the game talking about losing Luis Garcia to Tommy John.
That's a tremendous blow. I mean, I was praying that it was, you know, something different, something minor. You're always afraid of that, you know, when it's in the elbow. And, I mean, he's had a, you know, kind of a rough time, you know, with his father dying a year ago. And, boy, that was a tough one. I mean, but he's a strong kid. He's in, you know, good spirits. And, but that's a tremendous blow. Hopefully, you know, France and the other young guys can give us a lift. I think I asked Jeremiah, you know, when did he feel it? And he said he kind of felt it on pitch. He couldn't remember if it was 3 or 4 around there. And, you know, you just feel it. But we were hoping that it was minor. And you just hate for, you know, a young guy to, you know, go through that. But, you know, I've seen guys come back actually better and throwing harder when they come back. So, you know, if anybody can come back, I mean, he knows how to train. And we have some guys here that have had it and that can, you know, help him kind of through this. And I think that's going to help a lot.
Yeah, the one thing with this injury is that it's not the Tommy John that it once was. It's like the ACL injury in football. Like, it felt like pre-Adrian Peterson, when a player would tear his ACL in the NFL, like you're like, oh, that dude's career is over, right? Maybe in the NBA, it's the Achilles now with what Kevin Durant's doing coming back from that. But in baseball, it was like, once you have Tommy John,
you're never the same.
You're never the same. That's not the case anymore.
We just saw Justin Verlander come back and win the Cy Young in his late 30s and get rewarded with a incredibly lucrative contract.
Yes.
After having Tommy John. So
yeah,
the injury has changed completely. But that being said, this is still a massive blow to both Garcia and the team, because I thought Garcia was poised for what was probably going to be his best season as a major leaguer. He looked incredible in the WBC, looked awesome in spring training, and then after a couple rocky starts to begin the year, looked fantastic in his last couple of outings.
Yeah, he really was like turned the corner like very quickly.
Yeah.
The concerns about like what's it with like without the Rock the Baby, all that stuff, it evaporated basically in the last 3 starts. And now best case scenario is Luis Garcia is on the mound like the 3rd or 4th game of the season in 2024. And that sucks. Like you're talking about a team that just won the World Series and you're missing 5 guys that were on the playoff roster right now. And you can't even include Michael Brantley in that because he was hurt. But you don't have Brantley, Chaz, Altuve, McCullers, Urquidy, Garcia. That's brutal. Like, the Astros injury bug, like it is – we all know how sports work. Like, injury karma is always a real thing. Like, if you go through a full season and, like, everything's fine and dandy and, like, you don't have a ton of injuries, you know the next season's going to kick your ass. And it is kicking the Astros' ass so far. But that's why, like, I think it was Major League, it was ESPN, did their grades, which I'm going to start being like Paul Gallant here and say how much I hate grades. Because, like, they gave the Astros a C for the first month of the season. They finished 15-13. Without all of, like, those guys, basically. And now, Urquidy and Garcia were there most of the time. But they finished 2 games above 500 without Altuve, Brantley, Chaz McCormick. They're 2 games above 500 right now. The Mariners, the biggest threat to your season, are 2 games below 500. You're missing 5 or 6 of your best players. Like, So while it's all like there's some doom and gloom feelings here, what the Astros have done so far has been extremely impressive.
Yeah, it needs
like,
context.
You can't deny that.
Yeah, you need context when you're talking about that sort of thing. And that's the one positive that you can take away from really all of this sort of negativity that has floated around the team for the start of the season. The fact of the matter is they're still two games above 500 now, and they've done that despite having a relatively tough stretch of schedule in the middle, which they looked fantastic in, by the way. And to do all of that with the context of the fact that, hey, this team is playing at 75% at best in terms of what they can put out with their roster.
That might be generous.
I think that's probably a little generous. We're probably talking really 65%
yeah.
or so.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing this with two-thirds of your real roster, essentially. And, look, that's impressive no matter how you want to slice it.
And we're going to get into, like, what's kind of next for the Astros rotation in the next segment here. But who do you think is the – who's the pressure on now? Because you could say you have the three remaining starters plus your young guys that are coming up. J.P. France makes his major league debut tonight. You have the lineup, which is, by Monday we'll likely have Michael Brantley and Chaz McCormick back. And happy birthday, Jose Altuve. Hopefully you're back soon. But then you have the bullpen, which has still been pretty incredible for the most part this season. So, like, who is the most pressure on them the rest of the season now, do you feel like?
I think it's between the bullpen and the rotation, because the bullpen is going to have to remain at this level of excellence that they've had now for well over a season. Best bullpen in baseball last year, and they've returned to that form this season after a rough start to the year. They're going to have to continue to be perfect or close to it, because the starting rotation is not going to be going 6-7 innings into games on a consistent basis anymore, especially with the amount of fill-ins that you're going to have now. J.P. France, Brandon Belak getting the start.
Was 75 pitches was his max.
Yeah.
Like, if J.P. France is in the same category, you're talking about guys that if they're not efficient, you're going five games.
Yeah.
Like,
the bullpen is
five innings.
They're going to be taxed to a level that I don't think that they were last season. And I think that they're capable of shouldering that load, but it's going to be a major test, because all of a sudden you are not going to have this perfect situation that we had for the majority of last year, where it was damn near every starter seemed to go 6 or 7 innings, and then you went to your three guys in the pen, closing it out with Presley in the ninth, and it was just like clockwork every single game.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the lineup that, because I think, first of all, I think that expectation is, because of how good they are, is fair, but it's also unfair with all these injuries to say, like, the bullpen can be that good again. Like, there's just no way, it feels like. And look, the way the Astros season's going, I got some bad feeling about, like, what's next. Like, it just feels like the injury bug is going to be something the Astros battle this entire season. But I think the pressure's on the lineup. Like, you need this team to win games besides being carried by Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker. Like, you need Alex Bregman to figure it out. Like,
be Alex Bregman, please. Please.
Like, look, we get it. Like, we're having a trash can conversation about how much we miss him on the Twitch chat here. The trash cans are gone, so MVP Alex Bregman, like, might be gone forever. I don't know if that's correlated, but he has not been the same since, like, 2018, 2019. But, like, great with the walks. But, like, can we get, like, the batting average, like, 250, buddy? Like, can we get, like, can you be a little bit better, Jeremy Pena? Can you stop swinging at sliders? Jose Abreu, can you hit a baseball? Like, I mean, even when Altuve and Brantley come back, like, this lineup with the way Jake Myers is playing is good enough to where they can overcome bad pitching. But they don't do it enough. Like, there's too much talent in the lineup to, like, have 1-0 losses to the Giants.
They're not performing to the level right now. This is one of Dusty's favorite sayings, it seems like. He keeps talking about water finding its level. Well, the water needs to find its level pretty damn quickly, because I'm extreme, like, maybe everyone is just in one of those sort of slumps all at the same time, or at least that's what it sort of felt like over the past week. But I'm very tired of some of the at-bats that we've seen the team put together for large stretches of the early part of this season.
All right, he's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George at the bullpen here with you until 2 o'clock. So what's the solution? Luis Garcia is out for the season. Lance McCullers Jr. is throwing a bullpen session today. Feels like his return is still like a month away at this point. Jose Urquidy probably out a month as well. So what is the best strategy for the Astros for the next month, for the next season, to win the World Series? We talk about that next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George and Andrew Carlson here with you till 2 o'clock. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. How you feeling about your Astros right now? Let us know. 713-780-3776. I'm going to puke my brains out. 0105. Time to get Trevor Bauer. Go away. That's not happening. There is no chance. We'll start the conversation there of, like, what did the Astros do next? That guy can't even be friends with his teammates in Japan. Like, they don't like him already. They're calling him out for his sword celebration.
Nobody likes the guy.
Like, that guy is scumbag city. He has been a nuisance in Major League Baseball, in my opinion, since 2016. If you're too immature to realize, hey, maybe I don't try to put together a drone when the Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series, because then he cut his finger and couldn't pitch in the World Series. I'm just a Cubs fan. I say thank you. But, like, what are, like, no. No, no Trevor Bauer.
We're going to start and end the Trevor Bauer conversation right here. Not happening. Will never happen. Do not want it to happen.
Yeah, look, there are a lot of options they can do. And one of the things we'll get into here a little bit is, you know, this could be breaking news, first time ever in the history of the Twitch. Dick Willie asked a real question.
Oh, no way.
Do you think, Andrew, that Dubon, McCormick, Myers, or McCullers could get traded?
Absolutely.
Not McCullers.
I think that McCullers is going to be here. One, I don't think that any other team is going to be willing to absorb that contract, given his injury history. So I just think he's more valuable to the Astros.
You need him too.
Yeah, like, there's just no shot they're trading McCullers. I think Dubon as a utility piece not going to be moved. Like, they traded for him last year for a reason. He's going to be the fill in whenever somebody has an off day at one of the various positions across the infield or the outfield. He's effectively going to be a worse version of Aledmys Diaz or Marwin Gonzalez over the past couple seasons. So I think Mauricio Dubon is out of the question. Chaz McCormick, on the other hand, look, Dusty has already made it very clear that for whatever reason, he is not a massive fan of the guy. Like, he only starts him when he basically has no other choice and he has been forced to start him. And for whatever reason, despite the fact that Chaz continues to excel on the field when he's out there, Dusty still doesn't really take a liking to him for whatever reason.
Sure.
It would not shock me at all if Dusty's like, hey, we want to move forward with Jake Myers as our everyday center fielder. Chaz, you're going to be moved for an arm or something that we can use to bolster our rotation or bullpen to help us through the stretch.
I think it's very possible that McCormick or Myers is traded. Jake Myers, I would lean to Chaz McCormick, but I think, like, his value is like Phil Maton. Like, it's like Miles Straw. I know he's older than Straw was when he's traded, but, like, that's the guy you trade to a team that has a deep bullpen that, like, needs some help in the outfield, and you get a bullpen piece, and hopefully you steal a Yonier Diaz like James Click did from the Indians in that deal. But, like, was that the Indians? I think so.
Yeah,
it was. They're the Guardians now, for the record, but they were the Indians at the time. I don't think it's out of the question that Jake Myers gets traded. Because there's some pressure being put on these guys, even though Jake's playing great in the minors. Like, Justin Dearden, he's hit 2 grand slams in the last 2 days. He is raking in Sugar Land. And, like, that's a guy that everyone talked about in spring training. Is like, could he be up? Could he be your everyday center fielder this season? And some people said yes. Before the season, Dana Brown called out and challenged Drew Gilbert. And all that dude does right now is hit tanks.
Dude, he's raking. Like, he is raking right now.
I don't think it's insane that, like, if someone called with, like, a quality starting pitcher that is under team control and they said, we want Jake Myers to be our everyday center fielder, I don't think it's crazy to think that the way he's playing, you make that move, because all of a sudden center field is the deepest position in your organization. Like, you have Myers, McCormick, Pedro Leon, you have Justin Dearden, and you have
Drew Gilbert.
You have 5 guys for, like, 2 spots.
Yeah, and I think that the potential to transition to one of those guys in the minor league system is why you mentioning that Jake Myers trade may make more sense for the Astros, because they can look at it as...
You can get a bigger fish.
That Chaz may be here for another year or two, And that will be the bridge to whoever it is that's coming up through the minor league system, whether it be Justin Dearden or Drew Gilbert. And Myers, if you're anticipating him to be the center field, you're anticipating that for like a, what, 3-4-5 year period until he's hitting arbitration, potentially beyond that. So he's going to have more value on what you can get in a potential return. And yeah, I think that there's every chance that one of Chaz McCormick or Jake Myers is shift out of here by the time we hit the trade deadline.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think? Like, do you think they're going to be aggressive in pursuing another starting pitcher? Or do you think that like JP France and Belak are kind of the answer? There was some kind of thought that, so on was it Wednesday, the Space Cowboys scratched JP France and then he didn't pitch. And everyone's like, okay, like he's probably coming up. But then the next day they scratched Forrest Whitley and everyone thought the same. Well, then Forrest was hurt. So it's like everyone for a split second thought maybe Forrest Whitley was finally going to make his major league debut with the Astros. He's hurt.
I'm going to pass on that. Have you seen his stats over the last few games at Sugar Land?
His stuff is still kind of nasty. Like, I kind of like the idea. Like, I just kind of want to see it. I'll be honest. I owe a very large wager to someone at the Astros flagship because I said Forrest Whitley will never, ever pitch in a Houston Astros uniform outside of spring training. So I kind of like...
That's a little bold.
So I'm like torn of like... I think I made it like a year and a half ago, like before he got hurt the last time. So, but it's on the record. I get texted remind like all the time about it. Like, hey, he might be coming. I got a text immediately as soon as he got scratched and was like, you might have to pay this bet like on this week, like this weekend. So, but what do you think? What do you think is the strategy? Like, what's the strategy? How aggressive are they? And what, like, who do you want them to target or how do they approach this?
I don't think they're going to be honestly aggressive at all, at least initially. Like everything that this organization has done, I understand that Dana Brown is coming from a different like line of thinking coming in. But generally speaking, they haven't been a hyper-aggressive organization in terms of making reactive moves. I think they're going to look and see what they've got in-house with Belak and JP France. And if it gets to the point where that situation is relatively untenable in terms of them just not being able to really hold their own at the major league level on a consistent basis, then they look for help on the outside. But the Astros, at least in my time watching them during this run, have seemed like an organization that always looked to solve things in-house first before looking for solutions outside of the building. And I don't see any reason why it's going to be different here.
Yeah, the Astros acquired some nobody. No offense to this young man, because I don't know your name. All I know is he was drafted by Dana Brown in Toronto, a low-level pitcher, but like is stretched out to where that's kind of your depth in the minors as these guys get called up. I mean, that's really the biggest issue is like if someone else gets hurt, like you're going to have to be aggressive. I wonder if they'll take a flyer. Like if they'll go the Madison Bumgarner route. Like if they'll sign him to like a minor league deal, see if like they can work on his stuff and make it a little bit better. You know, Chris Archer is still a free agent. He might be hurt even. Carlos Martinez. Like there are guys out there who are like, have had success in the majors at some point.
What's Dallas Keuchel up to these days?
I mean, he's so bad. He was so bad last year. But honestly, like, it wouldn't... If Jim Crane's calling the shots, like, you never know. Like,
yeah.
So, like, I think that would be... I think that's step one is like, maybe go get, like, a Madison Bumgarner, sign him to a minor league deal, just kind of see, like, what it looks like and if you want to bring him up and... Like he was so bad in Arizona, like, and it doesn't seem like he's really got a sniff anywhere. So I think the plan is like status quo until the deadline.
Yeah, I agree. That's been the modus operandi for the Astros throughout this entire run, and I just don't understand or see any way or any reason that they would deviate from that now. Just, I mean, especially with the fact that Lance McCullers is. What, maybe a month, month and a half away, we feel like. He's throwing bullpens off a mound now. The last time that I listened to Lance talk, he said he was working on the velocity. I think they're in the 80s. They're trying to get it up into the low, mid-90s over the next couple of weeks. That sounds like someone who, in theory, is going to be back, fingers crossed, within the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, and hopefully Urquidy's coming back, too. And the thing is, and that's where some optimism here, okay? Fromber's still awesome. Lance McCullers and Urquidy should be back within a month and a half at the latest, it feels like. Hunter Brown, even when he doesn't have his best stuff, Like in the last game, he was getting, you know, squeezed a little bit. The control wasn't great, but like that kid's got monster elite Cy Young winning pitches. And then you have, you know, Christian Javier, who like he's another guy. Like I've got a ticket at like plus like 700 or something like that. Maybe it's more than that for Javier to win the Cy Young this year. When he doesn't have his best stuff, he strikes out 7 guys last night. So it's, even if you stuck with those 5 and you go into the playoffs this year, like I still think the Astros are a favorite to win the World Series with that staff. Because like, so that's where it's also like, if they don't do anything, I won't be shocked either.
Yeah, and that's why I don't expect them to do much of anything. Just because of the fact that you don't want to make any sort of long-term move for what is going to effectively be a short-term solution. If they do make a move, I think it's going to be something that's going to be a Band-Aid to get them through the stretch because they feel that Belak and France can't handle the moment.
And but what's interesting, though, is that like this is Dana Brown's welcome to the show, man. Mm-hmm. Like you are like welcome in to being a general manager in Major League Baseball for the first time. Like you've lost 2 starters in your rotation, one of them for the season. Like you've got a guy that your owner paid that can't hit a lick in Jose Abreu. You've got a bunch of injuries in your lineup. Like Dana Brown is being thrown right into the deep end right now, but kind of like James Click was. James Click was dealt a bad hand with a bullpen. He fixed it in 2 years.
Yeah.
Like it turned into one of the best bullpens we've ever seen in the history of baseball. So Dana Brown's got his work cut out for him, and who knows, he could be ultra aggressive compared to past guys. So he's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. You can find us on Twitter at Carlson Radio, at Joe George Radio. All right, the draft was 9 days ago. How we feeling? We feeling good? We feeling like now that like the dust has settled about, you know, the trade? Like, how do you feel about the draft just 9 days later? And what kind of success is CJ Stroud set up for? We'll talk about that next year on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's Joe George and Andrew Carlson here with you till 2 o'clock. So the draft was like 9 days ago. Math is hard. CJ Stroud met with the media. He's a Houston Texan. Will Anderson, Tank Dell, Juice Scruggs, all name team is here.
Does Juice get his nickname? Has he earned his nickname yet?
Well, see, sometimes you gotta like look at
his real name is Frederick.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
His real name is Frederick.
Why feel is he like called Juice then?
So we went into this on the Wheelhouse. He's called Juice because as a baby, he didn't like milk. He only liked juice.
Oh.
So his mom gave him juice instead of milk. I don't know how you grow up to be an NFL center on a diet of juice as a small child.
Isn't Tank's because he had a big head?
Yeah, Tank had a really big head, so his mom called him Tank.
Yeah.
And look, he's done enough in the city of Houston that I feel like he doesn't have to earn the nickname.
No.
Juice, on the other hand, you're Frederick until further notice.
No, it is. His name is Tank Dell. Like,
yeah.
So I'm in this Dynasty Fantasy Football League, and we have our draft day where you just draft the rookies. He's listed as Tank Dell. Yeah. Like, no one puts Nathaniel Dell. It's Tank. Like, that's your name. So I'm like, I am so excited to see him and CJ Stroud because, like, the one thing CJ does, I think, really well is the deep ball. And, like, if Mechie is healthy and Tank is healthy, the offense is going to be fun this year. Like, at a minimum, it's going to be fun. Yeah. It's not going to be vanilla Davis Mills offense.
That's all Texans fans have really been asking for multiple years, is to have a product on the field that they can be excited about. And that's the biggest takeaway from this draft, too, 9 days later. The excitement has not died down, at least not for me at all. The initial feeling that you had after that trade up to get Will Anderson at 3, and we can dive into whether we think, you know, 9 days now removed, whether we still like the move, dislike it, whatever.
Yeah, because you weren't here last week.
Yeah. I
know you like the move. Do you like the assets in the trade?
You can think they gave up too much and still think that the trade was one that was worth making. And that's the camp that I am in. Like, I feel like you can have both of those ideas coexist, and that's where I'm at. Like, do I enjoy the price that they gave up? Absolutely not. But this team has been dead in the water. This franchise has been dead in the water for over 3 years. There has been zero buzz, zero excitement, locally or nationally, about this team. And for the past week plus, all that anybody can talk about on a local or national basis is the Houston Texans. And that has not been the case for 5-6 years at least. You know, since they lost that 24-0 lead in KC, yeah, there has not been that level of interest and excitement around the team. So, yeah, like sometimes you got to pay sticker price for a car, Joe. Sometimes you got to pay a little bit above sticker price. But you know what? If that car lasts you for 10, 15 years and is a really good vehicle, no one's going to complain. And
no,
I think they're going to be all right.
Yeah, look, and the negative side of the draft is, and look, in another way you look at it, like we're all, if you love the trade and you think that the Texans are going to be good next year, and so their pick's not going to be that bad. If you think that they're going to suck next year, you're just going to rant and rave about how it's going to be a top three pick. Like it's all guess. Now I know that every mock draft, if you're one of those sick people that looks at way too early 2024 mock drafts,
oh
like,
my God,
it's yes, the Texans are projected in all of those to have number one or number two. Because their over-under win total is 5.5, it's at the bottom. They are tied for the worst odds with the Arizona Cardinals to win the Super Bowl. That's how those mock drafts are formulated. They're not formulated off of opinion. Like they just do it based off Vegas odds now, and whichever you choose, Super Bowl or win total. It doesn't mean that's going to be wrong. It doesn't mean it's going to be right. But that's the only justification, I think, for really almost either side, is that like you think the Texans are going to have the 15th pick and the Browns pick is going to be 10th and you're going to be on the winning side of this. Or you think they're going to have a top three pick and miss out on Marvin Harrison.
I think I believe the reality is going to be that the Texans pick will be somewhere in the 8 to 12 range. That's just where I feel it's going to be.
I agree.
They're going to be a 6, maybe a 7 win football team. And are you going to miss having that first round pick? A little bit. But you're also not going to be in the range to get a Caleb Williams, a Drake May, or a Marvin Harrison Jr. I think we're going to see tanking, the likes of which we've never seen at the NFL this upcoming season. If this quarterback class is everything that everybody has sort of talked about it being, where Caleb Williams is a generational type talent and the level of hype around Drake May just continues to build and build, yeah, and build, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is the greatest wide receiver prospect we've seen since Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, you have two franchise left tackles, one kid from Notre Dame, one from Penn State. Like, there's going to be another quarterback.
There are going to be so many teams that are worse than the Texans who are going to do everything in their power to lose games in the back half of next season. I just see zero way where the Texans end up with one of the five or so worst records.
Look, and if they do, yeah, it sucks. But like, that's where I think that the view of that is short-sighted. Like that, like, yes, it's the third pick. It's an immediate results game you're playing. You're saying the Texans lost this draft because they made an awful trade because they ended up with the third pick in 2024. It's still that book is not written. Like, yes, in 5 or 6 years. Is it very possible that you can say the Houston Texans could have had Lucas Van Ness, C.J. Stroud, someone, whoever they would have got, Joey Porter, oh no, he was taken, someone at 33, and then Marvin Harrison Jr.? Yes. However, if Nick Caserio got it right, and like you're building a franchise team that's going to win, you know, if you win, that's all that matters. Like, if you're winning football games, if this leads to C.J. Stroud being your franchise quarterback and Will Anderson being a 10-plus sack a year guy, then, like, who cares?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
And I think in the now, people keep saying, like, oh, we'll still care. No, man. Like,
no.
You won't, because you're winning football games. Like, that's – yeah, if it would be nice if you had Marvin Harrison Jr. But my biggest problem with, like, the argument of 2024 is everything's – It is like the NFL draft is just like the definition of the grass is always greener on the other side. Because last year, Mel Kiper, right after the draft, said that Will Anderson would have been taken ahead of Trevon Walker and Aiden Hutchinson. Now people are saying, ah, this is a weak draft. He's probably closer to like the 10th pick in the draft versus number three. Okay, great. We said this last year with the quarterbacks. You're waiting for Bryce Young. Now we're waiting for Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is being compared to Patrick Mahomes.
Every quarterback class.
Patrick Mahomes was the third quarterback taken in his draft because he wasn't like effective with like the basic fundamentals. He couldn't identify the middle linebacker.
Next year's quarterback class is always the greatest, right?
Always.
That's how this draft and the hype around the draft media works constantly, is next year's class is always so much more incredible. And now I will say, this year seemed like a relatively talent depleted class.
Oh, it was definitely lighter.
If you looked at the grades from a lot of people across the league and across media, they thought that in most years there were 15 at most, you know, 17, 18 players who had first round grades in this year as compared to other drafts. So But look, it doesn't matter because guess what? You traded up into the top three and got two of the three or five best players in the draft this year. And the thing I like about it most is the fact that it's a bet on yourself. And I will never be able to criticize somebody for betting on themselves, which is what Nick Caserio, D'Amico Ryans, and the Texans are doing trading up. They're saying, hey, we believe that we are not going to be a bad football team next year. So because we believe that this is a trade worth making.
Yeah, the only thing I will say, as I heard Caserio's interview on the flagship yesterday, and the way he talked about the 2024 pick, it did come off as like a little reckless. I think it's that he said, like, we'll worry about it when we get there.
That's not quite the attitude I would like him to have.
Because that does make me feel like he knows if he doesn't win like seven games this year, he's going to get fired. And that was my stance before the draft of why Nick Caserio shouldn't have been here anyways. Is because if a new GM was here and made this trade, at least you know that like that GM and D'Amico are tied together for the next 5 years. I do hate the idea that Nick Caserio traded away that draft capital and then could get fired. Like, that to me is reckless on the McNair's behalf, because it's just everyone should just be tied together. Like, it just makes everything easier. Everyone's in lockstep, you know? So it's I don't love that. Like, it seems a little like, we'll worry about it when we get there. I think you should probably worry about it a little bit now.
And I understand that, but I also think that there is something admirable about the fact that if Nick Caserio is going down with the ship, he's going to go out his way, and he's going to go down swinging. And that's something that I can totally respect as a fan looking on in from the outside, because of the fact that for a long time, this organization has not had that sort of mentality.
100%.
So to finally have someone who's saying, hey, you know what? We're going to go up there. We're going to take some big risks. We're going to take some big swings. It may not work out. And if it doesn't work out, the consequences are I lost my job. But hey, at least I went out going and doing things the way that I wanted to do them.
Yeah, look, and you can recover from this stuff. And that's the thing, too, that I think people are missing, that you can trade away a first-round pick, and if you get the picks right, like, it's okay.
They
like,
still have a first-round pick next year.
Yeah.
People are acting like they traded away just a massive haul of draft capital. This isn't a Laremy Tunsil trade where you are bereft of draft capital for multiple seasons. That's not going to be you have a first-round pick and a second-round pick next year still.
But I will say, like, they gave up a lot for Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
He has signed the two biggest contracts in the history at the time for a left tackle. You just signed him again. He's a franchise guy. Like, yes, you did not have the third pick in that draft, so the 49ers got Trey Lance from the Dolphins from that trade. But, like, you got a franchise left tackle. Yes, you gave up a first for Deshaun Watson, and it was a top five pick because he got hurt. But, like, before he was a perv, like, you had Deshaun Watson. Same thing with, like, you know, the Carolina Panthers. If the Carolina Panthers have the third pick in the draft next year and Marvin Harrison Jr. ends up being a Chicago Bear, I don't think the Carolina Panthers are going to care because they have Bryce Young. Same thing with the Texans. Like, if you got it right, you got it right. And yes, it's not fun when you don't, when, like, you're sitting there on draft and you're like, that could have been us. It's just, there's too much FOMO. Like, there's too much FOMO. There's too much fear of missing out. Like, that's what the problem is. I think everyone's upset that, like, the Texans are going to have the third pick and we can't do mock drafts for 6 months on the station. Like, I think that's what everyone's concerned about. They still have a first. So it's going to be okay. All right, we got a question in here about the Texans and where they finish in the division versus where Cleveland finishes in their division. We'll talk about that next, but also just how much success is C.J. Stroud set up for? We hit on that next here on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and
92.5. This is ESPN 97.5. Fun sports. You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I'm Joe George. He's Andrew Carlson. You can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio. Our producer Josh Day on Twitter at IMJ Chevy. So we got this question about where we think the Texans are going to finish in the division. Do you think there's a chance Texans finish not last in the AFC South? Also, is there a chance Cleveland finishes third or fourth in the AFC North? Yes and yes.
Absolutely. I think there's a chance the Texans finish second. I don't think it's the most likely outcome, but I think there's every shot that they are better than one of Tennessee or Indianapolis this season.
I think they could have a top 10 pick and still finish second in the division.
Wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. The AFC South is the winner of the AFC South has continually been the king of Trash Mountain. Yeah, like, the AFC South has been a garbage heap for over a decade now.
Yeah, like, when do they go from Tannehill to Levis? Like, I think that's the first question for, like, where Tennessee finishes. Because if Tannehill starts the whole season, that means likely that they're competing with Jacksonville for the top spot in the division. And the Indianapolis, like, I think they're going to be awful next year.
Anthony Richardson is incredibly exciting as a prospect.
Now, they, like,
he's supposed to start week one, according to the owner of the Indianapolis Colts.
Which he should be. So, real quick, with that, you want CJ starting week one?
Absolutely, no question. We're not rolling Case Keenum out there. Davis Mills may not be on the team. I hope he's not on the team.
We were talking about this on the Killer Bees. It's like, could you imagine a scenario where Case Keenum's out there and, like, I think the answer is no, no matter what. Like, I think it is Davis Mills if it's not C.J. Stroud.
I don't.
Which is to me why it's like it's impossible to think that C.J. is not going to start week one.
I don't imagine a scenario where Davis Mills is playing any significant snaps for the Texans ever again.
Yeah, but now and perennial all-star says this, like, while the Texans could finish second in their division and with a top 10 pick, the Browns could finish third in their division to make the playoffs. Like, the Browns, I think, are one of the more intriguing teams in the NFL. That whole division is because, you know, Kenny Pickett, they went out, the Steelers in this draft, and they said, we're going to fix our offensive line. They got a big offensive left tackle. They got a tight end who's primarily a blocker. Like, they know what their weaknesses are. And, like, they're going to run the ball with Najee Harris. They have George Pickens. Like, they have Deontay Johnson. Like, they've got talent on their roster. They've got probably one of the top three defensive players in the NFL in T.J. Watt. Like, could Pittsburgh be good next year? I think the answer is yes. Could Baltimore be good next year? Absolutely.
I think the answer will be yes.
I'm skeptical. I'm not a Lamar guy.
I mean, he's got a lot of weapons around him now. If there was ever a situation in which Lamar is going to thrive, look, he's already won an MVP. He's already thrived up to this point. But the amount of talent he's going to have on the outside, he was in his press conference after signing his contract earlier this week. He forgot to mention Mark Andrews. That's how many weapons they have at receiver. He forgot to mention Mark Andrews after going through all the list of guys he can throw to in a 45-second cut.
No, if OBJ, like, he showed enough where in L.A. where, like, there's still something in the tank. If he can recover again, like, OBJ can be a weapon. I love Zay Flowers. Like, to me, like, that was one of my favorite picks in the entire NFL draft. You know, Rashad Bateman, like, there's talent on that roster. J.K. Dobbins, I think, is almost like the key factor for me with Baltimore. Like, if J.K. Dobbins is back to himself from his, I think it was an Achilles injury for him, or maybe it was an ACL.
I think it was an ACL.
Like, if he's back, like, that just brings a dimension that, like they can be super talented. Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen, like, a ton of depth. And then you have, of course, you have Cincinnati, who might have the second best quarterback in the NFL on their roster with Joe Burrow, and, like, the best wide receiver room in the NFL by, like, a lot with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. So, like, could they be good? Who could win the division next year? I think there's four answers. Like, Pittsburgh almost made the playoffs last year. Like, I don't think Pittsburgh will win the division, but I think that division's going to be hyper-competitive.
Pittsburgh will always be pesky. Mike Tomlin, in 16 years as the head coach, has never finished below 500. That is remarkable.
Insane.
That is just a remarkable level of consistency. And it speaks to the fact that no matter what, the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be a pain in the ass for every single team in the AFC North.
Yeah, so could Cleveland finish third or fourth? Yes. Could that mean they still make the playoffs? Absolutely. And that's where, like, I think, like, the perfect scenario is, like, the Texans end up at, like, 11 or 12, just outside the top 10. Then as a Texans fan, if you hate the trade, you start to feel a little bit better about yourself. And then Cleveland ends up, like, 15th. So it's like you draft 11. Instead of drafting 11th, you draft 15th. Like, I think everyone's like, oh, wow, the Texans crushed this draft. Like, that's a pretty good one. Like, it's really win. So, it's going to be fascinating. They are in win-now mode, for sure. Like, you don't, now that you don't have your own first, like, you're playing to win football games.
Absolutely.
Sure. Like, you want to make that pick as awful as possible.
Yeah, oh, 100%. That should be the plan moving forward. There is no more of the, hey, we're looking just for signs of development. I know we talked earlier on in the offseason about what an ideal season would look like for the Texans.
Yeah.
Look, now there is no question. The ideal season for the Texans is you win as many football games as possible, and whatever development comes all along with that 100%. Is gravy.
Yeah. The one thing I think that, you know, Jeremy kind of laid this out, and I thought it was a really good point. The one thing with the Texans, though, this year, while, like, 1 through 22, with now with C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, and like Dalton Schultz and all these guys they add, Shaq Mason, is better now than it probably has been since that Chiefs game. The depth is bad.
Yeah.
Like, they're like two or three injuries away from being like one of the worst teams in the NFL. And look, they're still probably one of the worst teams in the NFL at this moment. That's okay. That's expected. Like, C.J. Stroud does not make you a playoff team in 1 year, but like you're much better, but your depth is brutal. I mean, like,
you're going to have to stay healthy. The top end of the roster is the most talented that it's been since Bill O'Brien started just, you know, shipping off DeAndre Hopkins and other pieces to the puzzle. Like, this is the most talented the top end of the roster has been in a very long time. The problem is, like you mentioned, it's a just paper-thin margin and level for error for this team, because the minute one of these two guys goes down, the minute somebody on the offensive line goes down, all of a sudden, like
Charlie Heck's out there.
We're going to be springing some major leaks. And
like, you're not, like, you're the opposite, as always. The Texans are the opposite of the Astros. The Astros are two games above 500 right now without like five guys, and we also think they have a pretty damn good chance to win the World Series. If the Texans get like two bad injuries, they're probably gonna have the number three pick, like at best case. So like that's like, and that's okay, but like it just shows you also how much like work this team needs to do to like be like a great football team. They just got a while to go. But just quickly here on C.J. Stroud, like, comparatively to Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson specifically, do you feel like he is set up for more success than those guys? And just like overall, how do you feel about C.J. Stroud, like if you take injuries out of the equation?
I think that Anthony Richardson is set up for the most success just because of the fact that if that Colts offensive line plays to its level, which is supposed to be one of the best offensive lines in all of football, then he will be protected extremely well. He's got someone in Shane Steichen who we know has an offensive system that is tailored perfectly to his sort of skill set. And they've also got some weapons on the outside. They've got Jonathan Taylor in the backfield. I think that Anthony Richardson probably has the most level of talent around him. The question is, how ready is he going to be to take advantage of that?
Yeah, I like his wide receiver room better than the other two guys. Like, I like Michael Pittman. I like Josh Downs, who they drafted. You know, like who the kid from Cincinnati, they got Alec Pierce.
Yep.
Like they've got some skill out there for sure. So I think in the immediate, but the thing is, it's like the real thing is Jonathan Taylor.
Right.
Like Jonathan Taylor, if he's healthy, he is a difference maker. I mean, that team is going to ground and pound and play like old school football this first year and like slowly bring him on as a passer. So I think C.J. Stroud, like, still is set up for success. Like, he should have a top 10 offensive line.
Yep.
He's got a very good running back. He's got a solid wide receiver room.
That might be a little generous. I think that the Texans' offensive line and situation for him isn't bad at all. Like, compared to what we have thrown rookie quarterbacks into the past, like
it's
with
like
David Carr,
100 times
this is infinitely more beneficial for C.J. Stroud than it was for a guy like David Carr. Like, the situations are not even comparable. C.J. Stroud should have time to operate. He's not going to be – you may have one of the better tackle rooms in theory in the NFL in Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil. So as long as the receivers can come along to a decent degree, C.J. Stroud is – you're not going to – he's not going to be having a lot of excuses if he fails.
Yeah. No, I agree. And look, and there's a lot of ifs in that wide receiver room. You've got a small guy in Tank Dell who, like, we both like, but, like, it's gonna, like, is he going to succeed right away? Like, I don't know. John Mechie coming off an ACL and beating cancer. Robert Woods, I think, is an awful signing. Like, to me, like, his best value is going to be for blocking for Tank Dell on screens. Like, what is Nico Collins? But, like, I love Dalton Schultz.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just, I think he's set up for more success than Carolina.
I think Bryce Young has the worst situation.
Oh,
the
three. I mean,
I don't think it's close.
I mean, the Chicago Bears said, we're going to look at the Carolina Panthers and we're going to take the three best players on your offense. Like, they literally signed Deontay Foreman, traded for DJ Moore, and Houston Roughnecks legend PJ Walker.
Go Roughnecks.
Like, it's, like, Adam Thielen and Jonathan Mingo are the best wide receivers for Carolina. I don't even know. Chuba Hubbard is their number one running back. Like, Bryce Young, I feel like, is in a tough spot. So at least it's better than that. Like, positive. The Texans have
positivity,
a better,
baby.
Positive Texans. Like, we're not going full on Homer Jeremy Branham like he did for you guys on Monday. Incredible segment. He literally wore his Homer hat. It was definitely another sports radio station. It was awesome. He's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. Do you still believe the Houston Astros are the favorites to go to the World Series out of the American League? We talk about that next year on ESPN 97.5.
Sports talk in Houston is terrible, except for ESPN 97.5. Never listen to any other station. ESPN 97.5 is not terrible. And that's why I love these guys. Knuckleheads.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.